media landscape in America is busted. Americans are on to the omissions, the half-truths, and the outright lies being propagated against we, the people. Your host, Tom Harris, will bring you the other side of the story.
Today's episode is going to be a little bit different. I'm joined by my co-host, Todd Royal, an energy expert from near Dallas, Texas, actually. Now, Todd, what is the reason you want to have an interview of me? Like, you're going to ask me questions for a change.
Yes, really, you know, Tom, as I've thought about this, I am somebody who wants to know more about the climate. You know, I'm an energy analyst, and the more that I analyze this, I've written 3 books, I've written about global warming, I've written about climate change. It's like the deeper I get into it, the more I realize I don't know anything about it. So I want to jump in here immediately and I want to pick your brain. As somebody, think of me as like an explorer and you are the Mount Everest of knowledge right now. So, okay, I've got so many questions I want to ask you. I'm going to start firing away at you. And I want our audience really come on a journey with me. If you're someone like myself who goes, I hear this all the time, but I have no idea about it. So here's my first question. I want to know, what is the difference between weather and climate? And should I actually care about the difference, or should I even care about them?
Well, Mark Twain had an expression. He said, you dress for the weather, but you shop for the climate. Because obviously, if it's a hot day, you're not going to put on a jacket, even if it is February. You know, here in Ottawa, we had up to 17 degrees Celsius, which is like about 60 degrees Fahrenheit in February. Like, that was incredible. Yet February is normally a month where it's below zero freezing. And so obviously I was going to dress for the weather. You know, I wore a light jacket and that was it. But the climate would indicate that I should shop for it being normal in February, which would be typically about minus 10. So Weather is what's happening right now, right here. Okay. And that's what affects us on a daily basis. The climate is an average of 30 years of weather. And that's why when so often people say, oh my goodness, you know, we had a really warm February in Ottawa, the climate's changing. I say, no, that would have to happen every year for about 30 years. And then you could say climate was changing.
Okay, then. So I dress for the weather, I shop for the climate. Then is there actually such a thing? Because I hear this all the time as a global temperature.
Oh, gosh. No, there's no such thing as a global temperature. Within science, there are different kinds of variables. They have intensive variables, and they have extensive variables. Now, extensive variables are measures of an amount of something. Okay, like weight, for example. You can add up people's weight and then divide by the number of people and get the average weight. That's called an extensive variable. But you can't do that with other quantities like temperature, okay, or viscosity or density. You can physically, you know, mathematically, you can statistically add them up, but it doesn't mean anything, okay? It's because they're a measure of a quality of something. All that matters is what's the temperature where you are, okay, where you live, where a plant or an animal is. The fact that there's a global average calculated with the statistics doesn't really mean anything. Let's say half of the Earth got 5 degrees warmer and half the Earth got 5 degrees colder. Well, that would be a massive temperature gradient. Okay, that would be a difference of 10 degrees. And that would cause incredible hurricanes and tornadoes and terrible storms because, of course, storms are driven by the difference in temperature or pressure, because the pressure is a reflection of the temperature. And yet the average temperature of the Earth would stay the same because it had decreased as much as it had increased over the whole planet. So the average temperature is a number. It's actually a statistic. You can calculate it, but there's two problems with it. First of all, it doesn't mean anything physically. But secondly, how would you average them? Would you do the same thing as you do with weight? For example, would you add up 1,000 different temperatures from all over the world and then divide by the number of temperatures? Okay, that would be the mean. That would be a statistical mean of those numbers. But who says that that's the right way to average things? Okay, there's all kinds of different averaging methods, not just the mean, but you could average things with what's called root mean square. In other words, you can square all the numbers, add them up and divide by the number, and then take the square root at the end.
Yeah.
And in some cases, that would actually make more sense, because the temperature is a function of the velocity of the molecule squared. So some people would say, well, if you really want to get an average temperature, you should do root mean square. But you see, the physics doesn't tell us how to take that average. So what they do across the world is they take thousands of temperature measurements from all over the planet. Okay. They add them up and they weight them. For example, if they have 15 temperature measurements in New York City, but only one in the whole of Oklahoma, they're going to weight the one in Oklahoma more because it covers a bigger area with just one thermometer. So many kinds of manipulations have to be done. You have to weight them depending on their area, how much of an area they represent. You also have to decide, how am I going to average these? Interestingly enough, you can take a group of numbers and average it using the mean method, you know, just taking the mean at one time and then taking the mean at another time, and you can show that the temperature statistic is rising. But if you take an RMS, if you take a different averaging method, you can actually show, you can show that with the same data, the temperature is dropping. Okay, so is it getting warmer or is it getting colder? The fact is, you don't know, because science does not tell us what sort of averaging method to use, and different averaging methods can either show warming or cooling. But if you take a step back and you say, yeah, that's all real interesting, but does an average mean anything? Does it actually matter? Well, the fact is, it doesn't matter, because there isn't a super being straddling the planet saying, oh, I feel an average warming today, or I feel an average cooling. You only feel things in regions. That's the only thing that matters. So when they plot average global temperature, or usually they plot average global temperature anomaly, in other words, how much it's gotten warmer or colder than a certain level that established in the past, it doesn't mean anything, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in the least if the Earth gets warmer in the statistical average, because nobody experiences it.
Okay, Tom, let's say I have 1,000 places to gauge the temperature across the world. Wouldn't New York City be hotter or colder than an open field in Oklahoma, let's say? So then if I took 30 years of those temperatures, wouldn't I need to add up all 30 years of that data, get the mean, divide it, but then how would I do like an urban island effect? How would I do a desert effect? How would I do in Antarctica and the South Pole? Like, wouldn't I need to do all of that together?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a movie that's just come out. It's on YouTube, and I'll put a link to it under the podcast when this goes up on Monday. It's called Climate the Movie. Okay. It's an amazing film. It interviews and deals with those kinds of questions. It interviews many of the world's leading experts in the climate field. And they make some really neat points. They show that virtually all the warming that's occurring, supposed warming that's occurring, is because it's warming in urban areas. When a city warms up during the daytime, it retains quite a lot of that heat in the asphalt, for example, and it only releases it slowly at night. So typically what you find is that the nighttime temperatures around cities are less cool than in the country. And they show in this particular movie some really interesting charts. They show that if you look at the rural temperature record, the temperature on farms, for example, long way from the city, if you look at the oceans, which of course are not affected by the urban heat island, not at all, you take the balloons that go up into the atmosphere way out of the urban heat island, and you take satellites, all four of those measurement methods show practically no warming. The warming that is actually causing the so-called average to increase is the urban heat island warming that's actually happening around cities. So they show that very clearly in this film. The warming of the Earth is not happening because the Earth is warming very much. It's because the cities are growing. And so the temperature within cities can be as much as 5 degrees Celsius warmer than the surrounding countryside. 5 degrees, okay? And when you have enough cities and you put that all into the equation, you get it a warming average.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay. So then what I hear about warming all the time is carbon dioxide, CO2. Yeah. You know, CO2 from fossil fuels. And we'll define fossil fuels as, you know, coal, natural gas, oil, which can be made into petroleum, you know, diesel, different petrochemicals, lubricants. So that's releasing carbon dioxide. But what's the difference in carbon dioxide, the one that's supposedly causing all the warming, versus me going, because isn't that carbon dioxide that I just breathed out? And then the third part of that is, I've looked at data from NASA that has satellite data that says the Earth has gotten greener the last 100 to 150, even 200 years since the quote-unquote industrial revolution, or the use of fossil fuels. So the use of this CO2 from fossil fuels, is that what's causing the greening? But if it's causing the greening, how is it also causing the warming? So there's my question of CO2 gas versus CO2, what I breathed out.
Yeah, well, there actually is no difference. They are CO2, which is the formula of one carbon and two oxygen atoms, okay? They combine together to cause CO2. And you know, it's interesting, carbon forms more compounds than any other substance in nature. It forms everything from you and me and carbon dioxide, of course, to butterflies, to poisons as well. I mean, PCBs are made largely with carbon. Okay, so carbon itself is a very active atom. It actually interacts with a lot of different atoms, and it also forms carbon dioxide. Now, one of the crazy things is that in the climate debate, our Prime Minister Trudeau, for example, constantly refers to carbon dioxide as carbon pollution, okay? Which is nuts for two reasons. One is because it's not carbon. Carbon is a solid substance like graphite or soot. That is carbon. Carbon, as I say, forms thousands of different kinds of molecules, some of which are great, like carbon dioxide, some of which are poison, like PCBs. So first of all, it's not carbon. Secondly, it's not pollution. Carbon dioxide is the stuff of life. And if carbon dioxide gets too low, that's when life dies. And you know, it's interesting, Todd, when I changed over from a climate alarmist to a climate realist, the person that was responsible for that was a local geologist at Carleton University. And basically, he took me into his lab and he showed me what the geologists are finding throughout Earth's history. What they're finding is that carbon dioxide now, even though it's increased by about 50% since 1880, is actually one of the lowest levels in Earth's history. For example, 440 million years ago, carbon dioxide was more than 10 times as high as today. In other words, not a 50% rise like we saw in the last century, but a 1,000% greater CO2. Okay, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
And that was not the highest. There were times when it was 14 times as high. And so what you see in the movie, and I really have to emphasize, people have got to see this movie. It's called Climate the Movie. It's YouTube. It was just put out literally yesterday. What they show is that we're at one of the lowest levels of CO2 in Earth's history. Now, that's a real concern because in the last glacial period, 20,000 years ago, carbon dioxide got down almost to the level where plants start to die. Okay. So at 150 parts per million, right now it's 420, but 150 parts per million, life starts to die on Earth, and eventually all life would die because, of course, plants provide the food for the animals that we eat as well. We got down to 180 parts per million. And even at 420, which we are now, we're still at one of the lowest levels of CO2 in Earth's history. So I'll tell you something real funny. One of the advisors of ICSC Canada is Patrick Moore. He was one of the founders of Greenpeace. And it's interesting because he quit Greenpeace when he looked around the boardroom table, because he was the director, actually. He led the group, you know, internationally and in Canada. He looked around the table and he realized he was the only non-Marxist at the table. And they were pushing really crazy things. But, you know, he says, and this will blow your mind, and I'll put a link to his presentation on this. He shows that over the last several tens of millions of years, that carbon dioxide was naturally reducing lower and lower and lower. And that if we hadn't come along and liberated carbon dioxide from fossil fuels and from cement and other manufacturing processes, he says we were headed down to the end of life on Earth. Within, let's say, a million years or so, it would have been the end of life on Earth. So he says we saved life on Earth by liberating enough CO2 that we didn't get down to the 150 parts per million. To answer your question about the NASA, I'll put up on the web a video. It's about a 60-second video. And it has very nice music, and it shows images from space. It shows images from space in which NASA demonstrates that we're greening the planet. We are greening it enormously. We're actually allowing plants to grow into areas that were previously too dry, because the more CO2 they have, the less water they need. So the Earth is being greened by carbon dioxide. So it's not a pollutant. It's great. In fact, we should hope it doubles.
Oh my gosh, you're kind of blowing my brain right now. So then why, I almost want to take a deep breath. So then why would people then say that that's such a harmful gas? I mean, that's what you hear, whether the Trudeau government, the Biden administration, really any Western government right now is going to say that CO2 from fossil fuels is uncontrollably warming the Earth, and we are in a climate catastrophe. If we don't have net zero by 2050, we will die. We will face extinction. So yeah. where did this start that CO2, and then I'm going to throw this in there, we then hear about greenhouse gases. So what you hear is CO2, these GHG greenhouse gases, and then would you explain carbon again? So CO2, if I'm hearing you correctly, is a good thing. And Dr. Patrick Moore said we've been liberated because of fossil fuels. But then why is CO2 demonized so badly with fossil fuels? And then can you explain to me and the audience, what are greenhouse gases? And then explain carbon again.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it goes back to the late 1800s. A Swedish scientist by the name of Arrhenius showed that in his theory, that carbon dioxide was what they call an infrared absorbing gas. Okay? Okay. What he showed is that the sunlight comes through in the visible spectrum, for example, to the Earth. It warms the Earth. The Earth then emits radiation in the form of infrared, which is long wavelength. That's heat. And carbon dioxide absorbs some of that heat and then re-radiates it back into the atmosphere. So a lot of people say, oh, that's the greenhouse effect. But the thing is, it's not actually a greenhouse effect at all. It's infrared absorbing gases. A greenhouse doesn't work like that. A greenhouse has a solid roof, and it prevents the convective air currents from escaping. That's how a greenhouse works. It doesn't work like the so-called greenhouse effect. You get convective currents, which are heat currents, which start to swirl around in the atmosphere. They hit the roof and they're kept in the greenhouse. That's how a greenhouse stays warm, not because of any kind of infrared absorbing gases. So that was a theory, and it started in the 1800s. It was an interesting theory. Nobody really did much with it until James Hansen testified before the U.S. Senate. I believe it was 1981. I'll have to check that date. But around the same time, Margaret Thatcher, who was the Prime Minister of England in that general time frame, she had a massive coal miners' strike. Okay, and this is actually detailed in the movie, and I'll put a link to it up as well, called The Global Warming Swindle, which is kind of part one of the movie that was just released, okay? Big, long time frame between the two of them. Global Warming Swindle was about 15 years ago. And what they show in that video, because it's coming out of the UK, is that Margaret Thatcher wanted to cripple the coal unions because the strike was huge. The strike was causing massive disruption. And yes. So she apparently gave money to the Met Office, the Meteorological Office, to find some way to show that the CO2 from coal was causing a problem, okay? And they did. They found it out. They actually rediscovered Arrhenius's theory. And the theory then was, and as I say, around the same time, James Hansen was reinforcing it in the U.S. Congress. And that's something I should just say a little bit more about. You know, it's interesting. They brought him in, and he was an outlier. Most NASA people, because he was working for NASA, did not think that we had a carbon dioxide crisis, okay? But he did. He was like that one in 20 scientists who was concerned about this. And it's interesting because when you read about that hearing, the people that ran the hearing, Al Gore was one of them, Timothy Wirth was another, the Senate hearing, they scheduled the hearing to be on statistically the hottest day in Washington, D.C., because this was set up as theater, okay? They wanted James Hansen to present theater. He was going to be a player in this actor. And you're an actor, so you'd know all about this.
Yes, I would.
Yeah. So what they did is they did two things. First of all, they chose what was statistically the warmest day in the history of Washington. That's when they had the hearing. And then the night before the hearing, they went into the hearing room and they opened all the windows so that when they actually, you know, they came in the next day and just before the hearing, the windows were closed. Air conditioners, you can hear them thumping away in the background, trying to cool it down. Everybody's sweating like crazy. And of course, Jim Hansen is up there actually describing the end of the world from global warming while he's sweating and everybody is super hot. So it was theater. It was really theater. And that's when the global warming scare started in the United States and you know, North America for sure. It was happening, as I say, around the same time in England. But the NASA supervisors of James Hansen, I understand, were not happy with this at all because he was an outlier. But Al Gore and Timothy Wirth, they got him to come in and give this testimony. So that's where it started. And, you know, it's interesting because when you look at the record, that actual day, not only was it statistically the hottest day over many years, it was one of the hottest Junes in history as well. So this started with theater. It started with theater. And of course, that was a theory that they had at the time, that Arrhenius's calculations would show that increasing CO2 by 40% or whatever was going to cause dangerous global warming. And of course, media loves sensationalism.
Sure.
And up to that point, global cooling in the 1970s had actually been occurring. That was the sort of traditional, or I should say popular, point of view at that time. Everything started to turn around when Hansen made this particular forecast that we were headed for global warming and disastrous global warming.
So then what is GHG? What is greenhouse gases? What is carbon?
Well, greenhouse gases are any infrared absorbing gases. So carbon dioxide is one of them, but the primary one is water vapor. Okay, that is by far the biggest greenhouse gas, or and it's not really greenhouse because I, as I explained, it's actually it's misnamed. The main greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, the main infrared absorbing gas, is water vapor. Okay, that's the main one. The greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, is much less powerful than water vapor. But under that, there's quite a few other greenhouse gases. Methane, CH4, which comes from cow flatulence. That's another one. It's very weak in comparison with CO2 and very weak in comparison with water vapor. And another one is nitrous oxide, N2O. Okay, so those are other greenhouse gases. They're hydrochlorofluorocarbons, you know, the ozone-destroying chemicals. Mm-hmm, there's various other ones. So, yeah, there's a whole slew of them. And when they talk about reducing greenhouse gases from human activity, because the main greenhouse gas is water vapor from the oceans, okay, that's the main one. When they talk about greenhouse gas in general, they're talking about that that's produced by humans. And in particular, most of it is carbon dioxide. It's interesting because in the United States, the greenhouse gas that is most emitted by human activities, if you don't count water vapor, is carbon dioxide. Like about 80% of greenhouse gases that we're concerned about in the US and Canada, Western countries, about 80% of it is carbon dioxide. In the Far East, some of the countries, the main one would be methane, okay, from rice paddies and things like that. But really, greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, those are kind of synonymous when it comes to the West. When you hear about them saying we have to reduce greenhouse gases, because 80% of it is carbon dioxide coming from humans that, you know, that we're trying to control, what they're really saying is control carbon dioxide. So, the greenhouse gas term is a wrong term, very much like the carbon term is a wrong term. But when they say greenhouse gases, they mean mostly carbon dioxide.
So then, okay. So then tell me again, what is carbon? And then CO2 is a greenhouse gas. So then does that CO2 affect atmospheric temperatures, which means things that are way, way up there?
Yeah.
I mean, this is where it gets it gets so darn complicated.
Yeah, that's right. And CO2 does affect global temperature, you know, this so-called fictitious global temperature, because it doesn't really exist. But it does make the planet somewhat warmer. And it's a good thing, because without carbon dioxide, many scientists calculate that we would be a frozen ice ball. So CO2 is a beneficial thing, not just for plant food, but it also helps keep the planet quite warm, comparatively warm into what it would be like without CO2. But here's the thing that's really interesting. carbon dioxide does not warm the Earth in a linear fashion. In other words, if you have a 10 part per million increase now, you don't get the same temperature change as if you went back in time to when the CO2 was perhaps 200 parts per million, a bit after the last glacial. If it then went up 10 parts per million, then you'd get a lot more warming. Because you see, if you draw a curve of how much warming should occur because of rising CO2, it's what they call, it's called logarithmic, okay? At the beginning, a little bit of increase in CO2 causes quite a lot of warming. So when you go, if you went from zero, we've never been at zero, but if you did go from zero to 20 parts per million, you'd get quite a lot of warming. But right now, way up around 400, 410 parts per million, the atmosphere is pretty well saturated from the point of view of temperature rise or sensitivity to carbon dioxide rise. So yeah, at the beginning, 20 parts per million rise in CO2 gives quite a temperature rise. However, now at around 400 parts per million, 20 parts per million gives very little. And the analogy that the best analogy I've seen is it's like painting a window with black paint. Your first coat of black paint takes out virtually all the light transmission through the window. You can put on more coats of black paint and make it darker and darker and darker, but you do get to a point where putting on more and more black paint really doesn't make much difference, if any difference. And so that's exactly what's happened in the atmosphere. We're at a point where, like painting a window black, we've already put a few coats on. Okay, so most of the light has been filtered out. Put on another coat, you don't get much change. So we could double CO2 from around 420 now to 840 parts per million, double the CO2, and the temperature change would be certainly less than, say, 1 and a bit degrees. Okay, that's the calculation that scientists make now. So we're really at a point where the atmosphere is pretty well saturated with CO2. Rising CO2 at our current level does almost nothing. You know, Todd, we have to go for a break now, unfortunately. But this is a really interesting topic, because even if you're fearful of CO2 at today's level, you shouldn't worry about it, because most of the warming that could occur has already occurred.
Okay. Let's go to our break.
Before we go to the break, I'd like to tell everybody about a new ready-to-eat metabolic health bar that I've started to make a regular part of my diet. It's called Heal Right, and it isn't just any old health food bar. It was developed after over 15 years of research by National Medal of Science recipient Dr. Bruce Ames and a team of scientists at University of California, San Francisco, Benioff Children's Hospital and Research Center at Oakland. Dr. Ames and his team developed Heal Right to address the epidemic of obesity and related diseases through micronutrition. They realized that the problems that many of us face with our health are not just due to consuming the wrong things, such as too much trans fats and sugar, but it's also due to the lack of sufficient micronutrients in our diet. In other words, the vitamins and minerals we need to be healthy. And that's the beauty of Heal Right food bars. Rather than having to consume countless vitamin and mineral pills and guessing at the correct dosages, these good-tasting bars give us over 20 essential micronutrients, antioxidants, fiber, proteins, and many other building blocks that promote high levels of health. To order Heal Right metabolic health bars, go to americaoutloud.shop and scroll down until you see the ad for Heal Right. Then click on the Heal Right ad and select Learn More to choose your order. I like caramel apple fig best. It's really wonderful. When you place your order, be sure to use the code OUTLOUD to receive 20% off, an exclusive benefit for the America Out Loud family of listeners and readers.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX Throat Spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX. Because it works.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The buildup of spike proteins is dangerous to your health. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body, removing the spike proteins, allowing your body to repair from within. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to americaoutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
A suppression of truth in a world of darkness, void of any soul, requires that we are rightly informed, properly equipped, and strongly motivated to fight the corruption. AmericaOutloud.news is that place to awaken your heart, soul, and mind to the outloud truth. Now is our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
I'm back with my co-host, energy expert Todd Royal from Texas. So Todd, you were quizzing me with some basic greenhouse gas questions.
Here's my next one. Okay, so there's this common view of these GHGs, these greenhouse gases and planetary temperatures. What is that common view?
Well, the common view is that we're going to see more and more temperature rise, like significant temperature rise. Now, it is interesting because the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, which is driving a lot of this, they understand that CO2 is an infrared absorbing gas that has less and less impact as the amount of CO2 rises. They know, they're not stupid, they know that the atmosphere is nearly saturated. But the theory is this: you get a little bit of warming from CO2 rise, and that will cause, that warming will cause more evaporation. Now remember, water vapor is a greenhouse gas, and they say that will amplify the warming caused by CO2, and that will massively have a runaway, essentially. We're going to get extreme warming because of this feedback, this positive feedback.
Yeah.
More temperature, slight temperature rise from CO2 rise, causing more water vapor to evaporate, which again is a greenhouse gas that makes it warm even more. Now, there's a couple of problems with that theory. First of all, we don't observe it actually happening in history, and I'll talk about that in a second. But the second thing is that water vapor not only forms a greenhouse gas, which is warming, but it also forms clouds. Now, clouds, generally speaking, first of all, they have 10 times the influence than all human activity combined, okay? Clouds are massively influential.
Okay, so you're saying clouds have more influence than human activity of burning fossil fuels, of raising cows, of drilling for things like natural gas, of urban heat island effect. And then you are going to tell me this carbon thing again. I want you to throw carbon in there.
So you're saying
that clouds, and of course this carbon thing that I hear about, tell me why clouds have such a massive impact. And then how does carbon affect this common view of GHGs and planetary temperature that you're saying as well? I'm sorry, yeah, you got me on a roll right now, Tom.
It's okay. It's good. It's interesting because if some people feel confused, that's fine, because this is probably the most complex science we have ever tackled. Okay, and you and I are just scratching the top, okay? We got all kinds of things to talk about, galactic cosmic rays, all kinds of things. But the bottom line is that clouds actually are formed when you increase water vapor in the atmosphere. And clouds statistically are a cooling agent. Okay, they reflect sunlight off into space, so it doesn't even get to the Earth's surface. So what you have then is you have two effects that are opposite to each other. One is increasing water vapor because of a slight warming of CO2 on the climate.
That CO2 comes because I'm burning fossil fuels.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I want to clarify. Keep going.
And so that slight warming causes more evaporation, more water vapor, which is a warming agent, which the theory is, you know, the popular view is that accentuates the warming. But they are underestimating the impact of clouds, which are generally speaking a cooling agent. You know, clouds are incredibly complex. I mean, we can't forecast how they move in the atmosphere. But, you know, clouds both warm and cool the planet at the same time. But the overall effect of clouds is a cooling. So that tends to dampen the warming that would be caused by increased water vapor. And scientists now are starting to say, well, you know, this cloud thing is actually a negative feedback. In other words, the more clouds you have, the cooler the planet is. And this is one reason why you don't get the runaway greenhouse effect that some scientists think will happen, is because as more water vapor evaporates with a slightly warming climate due to CO2, you have a cooling agent that moderates the warming. And you know, it's interesting, Pat Michaels, who was a meteorologist, he just passed away, a wonderful man. He said that the whole theory of this kind of fragile Earth, you know, we're at the tip of a razor's edge. It's going to tip. It's going to run away into runaway greenhouse effect. He says, no. He says the Earth is a robust system. Okay, the old paradigm of a fragile Earth, he said, is increasingly being replaced with a robust Earth theory.
Okay.
And you sort of say, yeah, obviously that's the case, because if it were true that warming caused by CO2 would eventually cause runaway warming, we would have had incredible temperatures, almost like Venus temperatures, on the Earth when CO2 was 10 times higher in the past. But it didn't happen. I mean, the Earth was certainly warmer, no question about it, because of various factors. But we didn't have a runaway greenhouse that went to disaster. So the Earth has built within it all kinds of negative feedbacks, things that actually reduce the driver, so to speak, of warming and cooling and everything else, so that the planet's climate is actually pretty robust. Okay. The changes in our climate are moderated by secondary effects. And in this case, it's moderated by the influence of clouds, which tend to cool the Earth. And that's why.
Wow.
And you know, Todd, it's interesting because the scientist William Happer, who's a physics professor at Princeton University, he recently has been touring the world giving presentations to show what would happen if CO2 doubled, or if methane doubled, or if nitrous oxide doubled. And what he shows is very similar to what I was saying earlier, that, you know, the atmosphere is saturated with CO2. Most of the warming that could occur has already occurred. He shows that the amount of warming, you know, that we could experience with a doubling of CO2 might be as much as a degree. I mean, it's probably less. And he shows that the same thing with methane and nitrous oxide, which are the other two greenhouse gases that are most attacked by the climate lobby, that they have even less impact. So even when you do a actual radiation analysis, and William Happer is a radiation expert, he shows that you simply cannot have more than modest amounts of warming from CO2 and even less from methane and nitrous oxide. And yet our governments keep telling us that this whole thing is going to run away into a disaster. But physically, it can't happen. And that's what we see in the Earth's record as well. We don't see the Earth going to hell in a handbasket when CO2 is double.
Yeah,
I mean, if you go back, you go back 50 million years, for example, CO2 was something like 2,000 parts per million, in contrast to today's 420. And, you know, the Earth didn't suddenly turn into an oven. So this is where I became a climate realist. It's when this particular scientist, who doesn't want me to mention his name, because you'd be amazed at the attacks these guys get, okay, by saying basic science stuff, okay?
Yep.
Well, they get attacks. I mean, Tim Ball, who is an historical climatologist, he actually had 5 serious death threats, okay, which involved police. Various scientists in the United States have had bullet holes put through their office windows, and I won't say who they are because I don't want to encourage copycat. I don't want to see people do the same thing. Yeah, I mean, one of our scientists, for example, an East Indian, he had racist death threats against his family because he was just simply allowing things to be published that were different to, because he was an editor in a major journal. He was allowing things to be published that did not coincide with the politically correct view. And so he actually withdrew entirely from the public debate. And that's why you don't have more scientists coming out and saying, hey, this whole climate thing is insane. I mean, it's physically impossible based on the physics for there to be a runaway greenhouse effect. And we didn't see it in the past when CO2 was really high. In fact, here's a stat that the listeners will probably be quite surprised to hear. The highest CO2 level that we can measure using proxies, okay, like ice cores and tree rings and things like that, we actually have various proxies for measuring both temperature and CO2 in the past. Mm-hmm. They believe the highest CO2 level was around as far back as we can go. We can only go back about 550 million years. That's a period that's called the Phanerozoic. The reason being that they use fossilized seashells to analyze the temperatures, and we can talk about that. And before 550 million years ago, there weren't hard-shelled sea creatures, so those fossils don't exist. But the highest CO2 was around 440 million years ago. And at that time, CO2 was something like 14 times, 1,400% of today's levels. And guess what the temperature was? If you believe the climate alarmists, you'd think the Earth would be broiling.
I'll say the temperature got up to an average of like 73 degrees.
Ah, you'd think so, eh? Well, actually, it was the coldest period in the whole record.
How? If the CO2 is that much higher and it's this even a mild greenhouse gas, wouldn't it trap the sun? And so why didn't it get hotter?
Well, because CO2 is not the primary driver of temperature. That's the whole point. I mean, CO2 has been much higher, as I say, 440 million years ago, 14 times higher than today. And we were in a period called an ice house, which is much colder than an ice age. Ice ages last, you know, for a few million years. Ice houses are much colder. They last for tens of millions of years. And some scientists believe that, in fact, the whole planet was covered with ice, including the oceans. Okay. So at that time, CO2 was 14 times today's level. And we were in the coldest period of the last half billion years. I started to think, that doesn't work. That doesn't match with what these people are saying. So I looked at more of the record. I talked to more geologists, and geologists are the people that know what happened in the real world when CO2 was much higher. And there was no correlation. Okay, there was no correlation. There were times when CO2 was very high and it was super cold, like then. There were times when CO2 was very high and it was medium, moderate temperature. Other times when it was warm, it was all over the map. Okay.
Wow.
And the interesting thing, Todd, is if you drill in quite tightly to the more recent record, let's say the last million years, which in Earth's history is like a blink of an eye, what you find is there is a correlation coming in and out of glacial periods between CO2 and temperature. But it's not CO2 driving temperature. It's the other way around. What you find is that temperature rises for whatever reason, and several centuries later, carbon dioxide rises. And the reason it's happening is because the oceans cannot hold as much carbon dioxide in solution when they're warmer. You take a can of pop out of the fridge, put it, you know, pour it into a glass, leave it on your counter. As the glass warms up, as the pop warms up, it releases CO2 into the atmosphere because, and your glass, your drink loses its fizz, okay? Yeah. So the oceans take centuries to warm when the atmosphere warms, and they release CO2 into the atmosphere. So in the short-term record, what you're seeing is an inverse correlation. You're seeing CO2 rising because the Earth is warmed, almost certainly because of solar activity. And that's what we're coming down to in all of this. When you look at more and more of the research that's come out in recent years, you find that CO2 is simply not driving temperature. So we could reduce all the CO2 we want from human activities. Mm-hmm. And the impact on temperature would be quite small because it's not a major driver. The major driver are other things like ocean currents, like clouds. Okay, those are a more major influence. And those have their origin in the influence of the sun. So that is actually what's coming out of the most recent research, is that CO2 is kind of just like a consequence of warming. It's not driving the warming. It can cause some warming itself, but most of the warming is caused by entirely different factors, influenced largely by the sun. So the bottom line on all this is that, yeah, the science, it's not only not settled, okay? They constantly say the science is settled.
So, we hear that. You know, and you would be called a denier right now.
Yeah, I know. In fact, I deny that I deny climate change. I'm a denial denier. They use denial to try and make you sound like a Holocaust denial person.
Yes.
Okay, so they're trying to discredit you, okay? They're using logical fallacies to try to make it so that people will not give you any credit. It's just like what Tim Patterson said. You know, he's the head of earth sciences at Carleton University here in Ottawa. He said when he testified before the House of Commons, there were various committees that he testified before. He said, the only constant about climate is change. It changes all the time. It always changes. And thank God it changes. Otherwise, we'd still be under 2 kilometers of ice where I live right now here in Canada. And that's how it was 20,000 years ago. There was 2 kilometers of ice grinding the bedrock, grinding our terrain. And that's why Canada, of course, is covered with all these lakes. I mean, we have more lakes than any other country because these glaciers were grinding their way across the landscape, making lakes.
So you're saying, hey, I'm not a denier, Todd. I looked at the science. I looked at the physics. Carbon dioxide does this. It creates this water vapor, which has clouds, which greens the earth. But then when you start to look at the earth historically, CO2 doesn't seem to be a driver the way that water vapor, the way the sun and a host of other activities, CO2 is a factor, but it doesn't even seem to be that big of a factor. So you're saying, I'm not a denier. I'm just looking at the facts. So then, how do you think this climate scare or climate catastrophe stuff, this rhetoric, where did it begin? And then who do you feel are the main promoters of it? I've got my ideas who the main promoters are, but tell me who you think, how did it start and who are the main promoters of it?
Yeah, well, I think it started because the media picked up on James Hansen's presentation, and Al Gore picked up on it. Okay. He says in his movie that this was massively influential for him. And, you know, after he lost the election, he needed a cause. Okay. And he actually believed that we were headed for dangerous global warming. And I think in North America, for sure, that Al Gore has been the primary driver of all of this. Okay. He had a massive platform, of course. All of these treaties, and this is something people don't realize, is they say, oh, the Paris Agreement says that China is supposed to cap its emissions at 2030, but they're not going to do it. And I'll tell you why we know they're not going to do it is because all of the climate treaties that the UN has, Kyoto, Paris, you know, all these different treaties, they're based on something called the Framework Convention on Climate Change, the FCCC. And that was actually signed by George Bush, the first one, in 1992 in Rio. And Canadian Prime Minister Brian Mulroney signed it as well.
Okay.
And what it says is this, in Article 4, and I'll put this up actually in the notes under the podcast because it's very, very important.
Yes.
Article 4 of the Framework Convention on Climate Change says this, the exact wording is, the first and overriding priority of developing nations, which they called China, and they still consider China a developing nation. The first and overriding priority of developing nations is poverty alleviation and development. Okay?
Yes.
It's not greenhouse gas reduction. Poverty alleviation and development is their primary priority. And that makes sense, of course, if you're trying to pull people out of poverty, that should be your first priority. So what's going to happen when 2030 rolls around is China's going to be booming. Right now, they're double the United States in greenhouse gas emissions. By 2030, they could easily be triple. But
easily.
people are going to say to China, hey, what are you doing? You're still building coal stations all over the world. You're massively increasing your greenhouse gas emissions. You have to cap it at 2030. And they're going to say, nope, we are classified under UN treaties as a developing nation. And we have this out clause, Article 4. It says our first and overriding priority is poverty alleviation and development. And if we want to have poverty alleviation and development, we need to use
fossil fuels.
Yeah. And in particular, coal, because coal is a very inexpensive source of electricity. So they will, in fact, soar through the 2030 levels and increase their emissions. India will do the same thing. Yep. Malaysia will do the same thing. Singapore, all these different countries.
Indonesia. Yep.
That's right. Indeed. And you were saying in one of our previous interviews that most of the growth in emissions is coming from the developing world, right?
Yeah. The United States is the only country, the only developed nation that met the Kyoto Protocol. And they're also the only one that have met the Paris Climate Agreement. They're the only one that's done it because there's been a widespread use of natural gas for electricity instead of coal.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Canada has gone way through our limits. We keep setting these silly targets, you know, but we break every single one of our agreements. And that's where actually I agree with the environmentalists in Canada. They're saying, what? You know, they're making another target. They never saw a target they wouldn't break. And so what's going to happen in 2030 is the primary generators of greenhouse gases, developing countries, will soar through the limit.
Soar through them.
And you'd laugh, Todd, the Chinese negotiator was cornered at the Conference of the Parties in Peru, I believe it was 2014. And they asked him, would you change this part of the framework convention, you know, which gives them the out clause? And you know what the Chinese ambassador said, or the Chinese negotiator said? He said, oh, no, the purpose of the Paris Agreement is to enforce the framework convention, not to change it. So they know they have a sweetheart deal. They can increase greenhouse gases as much as they want and still be following the UN treaties, whereas we're supposed to cripple our economy to do something which is entirely useless, and that is to reduce carbon dioxide. That's 80% of our greenhouse gas emission, to supposedly save the climate when you can't save the climate.
So then I know we're running up. We're about to end here. Just tell me briefly. And then I want to do at least another show with you on this. So I'm asking, let's consider this. Who are the main promoters of this climate scare today, this climate catastrophe? I call them catastrophists. Who are the main promoters of this besides Al Gore? Because if you're promoting something, you're benefiting from it. Yeah, so who is it? Who is it?
Well, I would say the main promoters financially are the alternative energy companies, the wind and solar power companies.
Okay.
You know, the Climate Policy Initiative out of San Francisco, they track what is called climate finance. In other words, how much money is being spent on trying to stop climate change, trying to adapt to climate change, et cetera. And the last figures I saw, it was like trillions per year, but they calculated way over $1 billion US a day is going into climate finance. And most of that is going into wind and solar power. Okay. So this is a massive moneymaker for the wind and solar companies, because they recognize that this is their, you know, this is their bread and butter. If they can continue to, if they can convince people that CO2 is this great demon, which it isn't, I mean, it's plant food, is wonderful for the earth. We should hope it doubles because it will increase crop productivity, which will help feed the world. And it'll have little effect on climate, but those, I'd say, are the primary recipients, the primary beneficiaries of the climate scare. And they're making an absolute fortune, of course, is the wind and solar companies. The nuclear industry, sadly, has jumped on board in many cases, the World Nuclear Federation. And they say that, you know, by our nuclear reactors, we're going to help stop climate change. Well, it is true that if you wanted to reduce greenhouse gases, that nuclear, of course, is a major, the only practical way to do it. Yeah. And there's tons of reasons, though, why nuclear is a very wonderful fuel. And we've talked about that in our past shows. But stopping climate change is not one of them. Okay.
No.
So, I mean, I'm always pushing them, stop using that, because the climate scare will collapse eventually. And everyone who's promoted it will be disgraced. So the nuclear industry should get off that hobby horse. They really should.
Yeah.
There are lots of other people driving it. And we only have another minute to go. So I'll just give a quick rundown and we can continue this because the drivers of the climate scare are really important to understand if we're going to defeat it. Because it's not just the moneymakers in the wind and solar industry. There are people who really believe in world governance. You know, for example, one of our previous environment ministers said that the Kyoto Protocol was the flagship of world governance. And that actually makes sense in a way, whether you like world governance or not. I don't. But if you did and you control CO2, then you control the world's energy largely because 80% of the world's energy is fossil fuels producing CO2. And if you control CO2, if you control energy, you control the world.
Yep.
And a really great illustration of that was before the Ukraine war with Russia. Russia and the Ukraine were having a disagreement over some particular policy. And so in the middle of the winter, Russia turned off the gas. And I'll tell you, the Ukraine came along pretty darn quickly to agree to what Russia wanted. So you control energy, you control the world. There's other drivers that we don't have time to get into, but this is an important topic. We should continue.
Tom, thank you. I know we have to go. I'm looking forward to our next show on this. I feel like I've only scratched the surface with you.
Yeah, actually, let's do next week's show on this because we're getting into the politics now, and this is really crucial to understand. You can present all the science you want, but if you don't understand who has the vested interests and what their real goals are, you won't win. You will not win.
You won't at all. You won't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Tom, we got to tune in.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, well, it was fun, Todd. You know me, I can't shut up.
I wish you'd keep talking more. But so I know we got to go. Thank you to everybody. Thank you very much, Tom.
Okay, thanks, Todd. Before we end the program, I'd like to remind listeners to check out these Heal Right food bars. Okay, they contain over 20 essential micronutrients, antioxidants, fiber, protein, and many other building blocks that promote high levels of health. To order these Heal Right bars, go to americaoutloud.shop and scroll down until you see the ad for Heal Right. Then click on the Heal Right ad and select Learn More to choose your order. As I said earlier, I love caramel, apple, fig best. Well, anyway, when you place your order, be sure to use the code OUTLOUD to receive 20% off. That's an exclusive benefit for the America Out Loud family of listeners and readers. So this is Todd Royal and Tom Harris signing out from the other side of the story.